Begin the current daf, Masechta Baba Basra, daf Memvav. Begin on the fourth line down by the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, we had a machlekes between Abaya and Rabba, how to qualify the halacha of our Mishnah, that we said that Uman ein lechazaka. The Mishnah said that although the topic of our parak, cheskes abatim, there are certain chazakas, assumptions we make, that when someone has something, we presume that it's his. However, certain types of people, we don't assume that it's theirs. One of them is an Uman. Well, why do you have this object? Because you're a tailor. You're a launderer. People give you their things. The fact that you have it does not prove that it's yours. Now, there was a machlekes at Abaye and Rabba regarding when do we say that the person is not believed. What? So now a tailor can never buy anything anymore because anything that he has, let's say regarding clothing, a person could say, well, I didn't sell it to you. You fix clothing and therefore give it back to me. So on that, Rabba had explained, and as the Gemara had later amended it, that it has to have two criteria. That A, that there are witnesses who could verify that it was originally given over with the objective of fixing it, not as a sale. Moreover, they right now are raw, they see right now that it's still by him. Whereas Abaye said that no, the primary concept is that if it's raw, if they see right now that he has it, then he's not going to be believed. However, that's not relevant even if it's Masa B'Edim or not. So even if it wasn't Masa B'Edim, he's not going to believe that we see it by him right now. That's Machlekes Abaye and Rabba. And that continues the Gemara, Masa B'Nachman B'Yitzchok, and he asks on Rabba from the halacha of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Uman in lechazaka. Those were the words of the Mishnah. That a craftsman, he does not have, although generally a person would have a chazaka, a Uman doesn't have a chazaka. So on that the Gemara explains the inferences. Uman hu de'in lechazaka. Okay, a craftsman will not have a chazaka. Ha'achar, but somebody else, a random person that's not a craftsman, yesh lechazaka, he would have a chazaka if he has someone else's thing. So on that the Gemara says, hechadami. What is this case that would be talking about that a Uman would not have a chazaka and a regular person would have a chazaka? Let's say someone else's jacket, someone else's clothing, whatever it is, shoes, you have his. Now, a regular person, well, we presume if you have it, then the guy probably sold it to you. And the Uman would not be. What's the case? If there are witnesses who could testify that this original owner gave it over to the craftsman in front of them, and moreover, that there's also the concept of Ra that we see right now that Talis is by him at this moment. So then the question is, if that's the case when it says the Uman in lechazaka, how could we make the inference but someone else would have a chazaka? But achar amayesh lechazaka, why would a different person, not an Uman, have a chazaka? But since there are witnesses who saw that it was given to him as a deposit, and moreover, they see that he has it in his possession right now, where therefore he cannot say, I already gave it back to you. So most definitely, he's not believed to say that he bought it, because why would he be any different than a sharecropper or a caretaker, where he cannot say that I have it because I bought it, because we know that you had it as a sharecropper, as a caretaker, so you also, we know you got it as a deposit. And we know that you didn't give it back because we see it still by you. And since it was given to you as a deposit, then you can't say that you bought it. So the question then becomes, so if that was the case of Uman in lechazaka, then why would someone else have a chazaka? Now, Rashbam explains, you cannot say that the case would be talking about where there were witnesses that saw it being given over to the Uman as a deposit, but they don't see it by him right now, and therefore if it's someone else, he would be believed, because in that case, even the Uman would be believed according to all opinions, because as explained in the previous daf, everyone agrees, even Rabba ultimately retracted and said that if you deposit something by someone else, even with witnesses, he does not have to give it back in front of witnesses. So therefore, if we wouldn't see by him right now that he has it, even the Uman would be believed because he has a miga to say that since I could tell you that I gave it back to you already, so even though now that I'm admitting that I still have it, but believe me that I had bought it from you and he would be believed. So that can't be the case. So if there's witnesses, then obviously it would be also that there's witnesses and that there's Ra, that they see it by him right now. If that's the case, so why would only be Uman wouldn't have a chazaka, even another person wouldn't have a chazaka? Elolav, rather says the Gemara, must be the Leka Edom, that it's talking about where there are no witnesses that were present at the time was originally given over to the Uman. And therefore, although that we see that right now the craftsman has it in his hand, so it's by the Uman that we say he's not going to have a chazaka, but by somebody else, who's not an Uman, we would say he would have a chazaka because he could say, yeah, why do I have his jacket? Because I bought it from him. Like anybody who buys movable items from his friend, we don't need witnesses to verify every transaction of movable items. Rather, since he's muchzik and it's in his possession, so he could say that it's mine, that I bought it from you. And Ukutani, and it's regarding such a case that we learned that Uman ain't loy chazaka, that a craftsman would not have a chazaka, even though there's no witnesses who were there at the time of when it was given over. But because since there's at least the element of Ra that they see it by him right now, he sees not believed. That's like Abaye, who said that all you need is Ra for the Uman not to have a chazaka, and not like Rabba, who said you need to have Ra and having it had Mesir Be'edim. Says the Gemara, you're right, Tiyuvta, this refutes the opinion of Rabba, who he said that the craftsman is going to be believed until you have both Edim, that it was given over to him as a deposit, meaning for his job like a tailor, and regarding Ra that we see by him right now. Here, obviously, we see from this halacha of our Mishnah, obviously it's not the case. That rather, it's even if it's only Ra, that the Uman will not be believed, but an Acher then would have a Chazaka. Now, the Rashbam concludes and he says, so what we see from our sugi is that everyone agrees, both Abaye and Rabba, that if someone gives a deposit to someone else, even with witnesses, he does not have to give it back with witnesses. Because as we said, Rabba ultimately even retracted Tabayi, who has said that. And so to the Gemara, later on, the Fa'ayinim Adalf and Perak HaMerchas Abayi's paskins, that even if someone deposited something by his friend with a document, he does not have to give it back in front of witnesses. Now, for the fact that the Gemara says over here that if there were witnesses, then why would someone else be believed? From that, we could infer that it was someone deposited something by his friend with witnesses, and we see that the deposit is still by him, that then he cannot claim that I gave it back to you, and then to claim but that afterwards you sold it back to me. That obviously we see from our Gemara that he wouldn't be believed. But that's only if we see that he has it by him right now. But if we don't see it by him, then he would be believed because then he has a migud to say that, look, believe me that I know originally it was given over to me with witnesses as a deposit, but believe me that I bought it from you subsequently because I could have claimed, since no one sees it by me right now, that I gave it back to you. So now that I'm saying that you sold it to me, that he's believed now with an oath. Now, this is only if it was originally deposited with this regular guy with witnesses who saw that it was being given just as a deposit. But if, let's say, a random guy, they see someone else's talus in his hand, his cloak, his pants, his blouse, whatever it is, and the witnesses recognize that it's this other person's things, and he's the one that's claiming, hey, why is my stuff by you? And this guy who's in possession of it right now is saying, well, I bought it from you. He's believed. Because this other guy is not believed, the original owner is not believed to say, well, I only gave it to you as a deposit. Because since there's no witnesses, so there's no reason for us to assume it was given as a deposit. And the one who is holding on to it is a chazaka to believe that he actually bought it from this other person. Now, this is only if the guy who we see him holding someone else's talis without having witnesses being given over to him originally as a deposit, that he's believed if he's not a craftsman. But if they see someone else's talis in the hand of an uman, and the uman is saying, well, I bought it, that he's not believed. Unless there's witnesses who see and verify that he originally had it in the way of as a purchase. Because even though it wasn't given over to him in front of with witnesses, but since they see it by him right now, as the Gemara explained in the previous stav, and that's the halacha of Abaye, we assume that for a craftsman it's like Dvar Masum Lahashal Lahaskir. And we assume that it was given over to you to fix and not that you bought it. But if it wasn't seen in his possession, then the craftsman is believed to say that he bought it, even if, and this is the opinion of Abaye, that because that's what the Gemara's conclusion is, not like Rabba, that even if it was originally given over in front of witnesses as a deposit, but since he could say that I give it back to you because no one sees it by him right now, he has it somewhere hidden, but no one sees it, so even when he says that I bought it, he's believed because Migu, he could have said I give it back to you. Now, this is all said by a craftsman who doesn't have a chazaka. This halacha was only said regarding the kalim that he works in. A tailor is regarding clothing. So for example, if he's a dyer, it's regarding garments that have to be dyed. Regarding a talis for a launderer, an article of clothing for those who are launderers. Someone that's a tanner, it's regarding hides. So regarding those items, he's not believed because, yeah, why did I just happen to sell to this tanner who works for other people's hides, happen to sell it to you? No, it was given to you to work. But something like shoes, he's not a cobbler, then they actually would have a chazaka. Now, when did we say that there's a difference between an uman and a regular person, that by the uman will not have a chazaka and the regular person will, is only by things which are not commonly rented or lent out. But things that are dvar masum lahash lahaska, that people usually lend it out or rent it out, then there's no difference between the uman or any regular person. If he says that I bought it, he's not believed as the Gemara says in Masechta Shavuos of Menvav Mabeis, because what do you mean? People always lend it out. I lent you my thing and now you say, oh, well, I have it. Must have been I bought it. No. These are things that people lend out, and until you could prove otherwise, you have to give it back to the original owner. Now the Gemara continues on this theme about the halacha of this part of the Mishnah regarding an uman. So Tana Rabbanan, we learned the braisa. Nischafu lekelim bekelim beveso uman. If someone's stuff, his articles of clothing or vessels, got mixed up in the house of the craftsman. In other words, that he gave to the professional, he gave him a talis, let's say the cleaners, and he gets back someone else's stuff, someone else's talis. Says the Braisa, Harizi Yishtamash Ben, so this guy who got back the wrong talis is allowed to use it, Achi Yavi Hala, until the other guy who had been given his talis from the Oman, until he comes back, V'yitol HaShaloi, and then he takes his own, and up until then, he's allowed to use this other guy's pants, his other guy's shirt, the other guy's jacket. Now, the chiddush of that is that we don't consider this guy what's called a shalosh lemidas. It's like a goslin. You can't borrow someone else's things without his awareness, without his permission. That's the chiddush, as the Gemara will later on explain. He's not considered a shalosh lemidas because, what, because he by mistake took your coat, you're allowed to take his coat from the coat room? You can't do that. The chiddush is that not, because what we could say, as the Gemara will explain, that actually the uman, the cleaner, the tailor, specifically gave you this other guy's thing. And we'll see exactly how he could do that if it's someone else's. But it says, the braisa, bebesa avala, bebesa mishta, let's say someone goes to a shiva house, to a house of mourning, or to a simcha, a house of festivities, and then it gets mixed up. He sees the same exact coat, I can't believe it, but it doesn't have his name inside. Someone took his, and now there's all other guy's stuff. Says the Braisa is a loyish tamash, but you can't go ahead and take this guy's coat. Actually, you have a halav, eat ashlan. Until this guy comes and takes his own, then he'll bring back yours, and then you'll have yours. But up until then, you can't use his, although he's by mistake using yours. Now the Gemara asks, Maishna Reishna, Maishna Seva, what's the difference between the two? It's difference between you go to a cleaner's, or if you go to a simcha, and you're getting back the wrong coat, what's the difference? Why by the uman could you use that other person's stuff, and by the simcha you cannot? So Amaravi says, I was sitting in front of my uncle Reb Chiya, and Reb Chiya told me, now Reb Chiya was coming to explain the halacha, the reisha. Why is the reisha different than the seifa? Why by the reisha, seemingly this halacha, the seifa, is the more simple one? Yeah, it's a shayla shel medas, because by mistake he took yours, doesn't mean you're allowed to take his by mistake. So why by the reisha are you allowed to? So Reb Chiya said, what? You don't think it's normal for a person to tell the craftsman, whether it be a cleaner or a tailor, machali talisi? I mean, he gave it, let's say, to the cleaner, wanted to clean it, didn't realize, I don't need it anymore. So he tells the cleaner, says, do me a favor, you have people coming all the time and with clothing, sell my talis, sell my cloak, sell my jacket. Now, therefore, what you could say is that the uman wanted to sell this guy's stuff. He told him, sell it for him. By mistake, he actually went and sold this other guy's jacket because they looked the same. Now, what happens is when this guy, who by mistake he sold his jacket, the wrong guy, he comes to pick up his stuff, he's like, oh my, I sold yours, he's thinking to himself, instead of this other guy's. So what he does is deliberately he gives him the guy who wanted to sell his jacket, who he didn't, he sold the wrong guy's jacket, he gives it to that guy. Now he's allowed to give it to him because actually it's not the guy's, it's not a shalosh lemedas, he wants it to be sold, he wants it to be given to someone else. Now, the only thing is, but the guy who got it sold didn't want his. But he's allowed to give this other guy's things. And therefore, until he's thinking, I'll get back this guy's jacket, let me first give him this other guy's jacket, which was he's permitted to use that. And therefore, he's allowed to give it to this wrong guy to go ahead and use it. Now, in contrast to a house of mourning or a house of a festivity, where there, it's just that people mixed up stuff. No one gave anyone permission to sell anything. And therefore, yes, there would be a problem. Shalosh lemidas. Now, the reason why the Gemara has to say this is because if it wasn't normative for a uman to sell someone else's items, then it would not be permitted because someone made a mistake and gave the wrong thing to the wrong person, because that would be exactly the same case as the seifa of when you mix up the stuff and that because a middle guy involved doesn't make it permitted, because ultimately the guy who has the wrong one is going to come back and he's going to claim his talis. And it's going to be someone else using it, which is shalosh lemidas. So therefore the Gemara says, and that's a Reb Chiya's explanation, because it could be that it was deliberately done that you got the wrong jacket because he sold your jacket by mistake. But he's allowed to go and take this guy's jacket who he's allowed to sell it, and therefore he's giving it to you, and therefore you're allowed to use it in the interim until he gets back your real jacket and then takes back that and sells it to the guy who he sold it to. Now, Amar Rav Chiya Bereid Rav Nachman, he qualifies this halacha and he says, Loi shanu, we didn't learn that when you get back the wrong talis from the uman that you're allowed to use it, Elohu. only if the Uman himself, that we could say that he did it deliberately the way we just explained it, if he gave it to you, then you're allowed to use it. Aval, but if let's say it was given to you by Ishti Ubanov, sometimes you come to the tailor, they're not home, his wife or his kids come and they give it to you, then loy, then you cannot use it, because by them you could say they made a mistake. They don't know the father, said, what's your number? My father's not home, let me go check, and he comes and he brings you the wrong jacket, then you can't use it, because then we could assume that it was an error. Now, moreover, qualifies the Gemara, who nami? Even the craftsman himself, loy man, we didn't say that if he gives it to you, someone else's, that looks the same like yours, that you're allowed to use it. Ela da'amalei talis stam. When he gives you, he says, here's this talis. Where you could say, the reason why he didn't say, this is your talis, is because he knows this is not yours. But he's deliberately giving you this other guy's talis who got mixed up with as a delay tactic, but you're allowed to go ahead and use that. Aval, but if let's say he tells you that here is talischa, your talis, obviously it's because he thinks that this is yours and he made a mistake. They look the same and the tailor made a mistake. Then says the Gemara, then loy, then you cannot use it because hi, love talis didehu, this is not his talis and he's not allowed to use the real guy's talis without his awareness, and that is the halacha, that then it would be forbidden. It's only when it's likely that he's deliberately giving you who he was allowed to go in and use this guy's stuff, and he sold yours by mistake, that's when you can use it. But if it's obvious that he made a mistake, you can't go ahead, just like by base oval and base mishta, use the guy who's using yours in that meantime. Now the Gemara continues related, which is related to the halacha of our mishnah, about Uman that does not have a chazaka, so only a bayla rava. Says Ta Achvi Lachra Moi de Pumbadisa. Abai tells Rav, he says, let me go ahead and show you the craftiness of the merchants of Pumbadisa, where the umnan, the craftsmen, that the people would bring their clothing to fix it. Whereas actually the Gemara says in Chulna Kafchav Zayin Mid Aleph that if you borrowed money from a Pumbadisian, you got to change where you live because these people were very crafty, very deceiving type of people. So Abai tells Rav, I'm going to show you how crafty these umnan are that. Are the craftsmen. Not my abdi, what do they do? So he says, Amalei, when the consumer comes to the craftsman, let's say to the tailor, he says, Havli Sarbiloi, give me my talis that I gave you to fix. So he tells him, Lohi Dvar Moilam. This never happened. I don't know what you told me. You never came to me to drop off a talis. So the guy responds, he says, Ha Isli Sahadi de Chazirbach, what are you talking about? I have witnesses who saw one garment by you, which is mine. Now, the witnesses didn't recognize 1,000% that it's this guy's stuff, but what do you mean? They saw my talis by you. So Amalei, so the woman says, no, that was somebody else's. That wasn't your talis. So the guy says back, Afkine v'nachzinu, take out the talis, let the witnesses see, and then you'll be able to say that it's someone else's and prove your truthfulness. And that you'll take away from yourself out of suspicion, because I know, and the witnesses saw very likely that was my talis. Take it out and prove that it's someone else's. So Malay, so the woman says to him, Ivra, no, loy mafkinu, for most definitely, I will not go ahead and take it out. In truth, I will not. Because of your empty vanity claims, I'm going to show you someone else's things. I'm not going to show you someone else's things. This is confidential. This is private. This is someone else's talis. Now that's the craftiness, because his intention is not for the sake of heaven. He's not like because he cares about disclosure policies. It's because he wants to steal his talis and doesn't want to show the truth, which is really this guy's talis. Now, I'm a Rava, but Rava responded to Abaya and he says, well, Shapa Kamale. Rava tells Abaya that the Uman, although that they are crafty, but they're really responding according to what the basic halacha is. Because even upstanding Jews could really make such a type of a claim. And what's the reason? Why would that be appropriate that he doesn't have to show him someone else's thing? And he wouldn't have to prove his point by taking it out? Because as we continue in Talmud Beis, Ra Tanya. We learned in the previous Braisa that the Halacha said, that which was the point of contention between Abaya and Rabba, which we explained at the end, that Ra Talisa Biyada Uman. If we see the Talis by the Uman, which is that we see it by him right now with witnesses, that's when we said that he's not believed to have a chazaka and he has to go ahead and give it back. But here, by these crafty merchants, that we don't see it by him right now. He's hiding it somewhere. And moreover, even the witnesses that did see it, they didn't recognize 1,000%, 100% that it's really this one. So ultimately, he is believed to say that I'm not going to take out and show you other people's stuff. He doesn't have to go ahead and give it back. Now, although you're right that they are crafty and they're really ganav and they're really thieves, but according to the basic halacha, he doesn't have to show it. It's only when we see it that then he has to give it back. Now, Amar Vashi, he continues the conversation. He says, now, vichakim, if the claimant is intelligent, the guy who gave his stuff to fix, and the guy says, I don't know what you're talking about, I don't got none of your stuff, so then he could be mashvi le'ra. He could be diligent and make with the right words that the merchant, that the craftsman, will end up showing him in front of witnesses to put out to see who if it's his talus. And once the witnesses see and recognize that they know that this is his talus, then he'll be able to take it away from him, because as we said, once it's raw, once people see his talus, then the Umman does not have a chazakah, and then they can't claim that it's mine or whatever. So Rav Ashi says, if someone's intelligent, he could create a situation where it will be visible by witnesses. How so? Because the Amar Lay, because the consumer will come privately, secretly, with subterfuge to the Umman, and he'll tell him like this. He says, look, I might have feces late. Why are you holding on to my talus? Lav mishum de islach, isn't it because, and this is part of his plot, his scheme, isn't it because there's money that you have, gaboy, that you have by me that I owe you? Now, you're afraid that I'm going to deny the money that I owe you. And this is what he's making up, because he wants to get this guy to do what he wants. He says, I don't deny the money I owe you, but I also don't deny what you owe me, and to hold on to the talus more than what's worth what I owe you. So he says, look, hashta afkinu, do me a favor. Go ahead now, take out the talus, which you and me both know is really mine, in front of people that are professional assessors, v'shayminu, and they'll assess the talus. And then shokel atidach, you'll be able to then take from me, which is what I owe you, v'ashkal notidin, then I'll take from you, which is the excess of what I owe you from the value of the talus, and I'll take that back to me. So by doing that, the guy will think, okay, he owes me money. He's telling me he owes me $100. His talus is worth $200. Okay, you know what? Fine, you know, I'll do that. And I'll take it out. And then they'll assess it at $200. Say, great, now give me $100. You take back $100. And they can say, no, now that we saw it by you, oh, there's no chazakah. Now you got to give back the whole talus. You don't get anything. Now, Amalei Ravacha, Bereid of Avila Ravashi, but they responded to Ravashi and said, it's not true. Because the Uman most definitely can be craftier. And he could recognize the craftiness of the consumer. And Matzi Amalei, he could respond back, and he's not going to be duped so fast. He could say, Leit Srichna L'Shumididach. He says, I don't need your evaluations, your assessment. Kvar Shamoi Kamoi, it was already evaluated for me, the Kamach, before you came. And what you owe me is not worth any more than the garment itself that I have, and therefore there's no reason for assessing it, essentially playing him out and never showing it, and thus, according to basic law, although he's a liar and a thief, able to hold on to it because of the basic halacha, if it's not ra, then you can't take it away from the Uman. Now the Gemara continues, explain the halacha of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah had said that Aris, the next category was regarding a shearcropper, that in other words, that we know initially that he went down to the field to work as a shearcropper, so then ein lei chazaka, then he does not have a chazaka. And the reason is because, what do you mean? 3 years he's been, 5 years he's been on the land and taking the payers and reaping and doing everything and no one protested? Of course not. We all know that he went down to work as a sharecropper. What do you think sharecroppers do? They work in someone else's field and they're supposed to be there. So being there for more than 3 years is not going to create a chazaka. Now that the Gemara asks, amai, but why does he not have a chazaka? Isn't it that Ada Idna, up until now, when he was working as a regular sharecropper, palga, he used to take half the profits like a sharecropper. A sharecropper doesn't take all the profits. It takes half, a third, a quarter. Now, Bahashta, he consumed kula, all the payers, for 3 years. That's not normal for sharecroppers to do. The owner of the field should have protested, and then why is it not a chazaka if an aris consumed all the payers for a period of 3 years? So Amar B'Yechon, and he explains, you're right. Our Mishnah is talking about barisei bati avis, that is talking about sharecroppers from family sharecroppers. In other words, that they have been watching the fields of this family for almost forever. Them, their fathers, their grandfathers, they've been sharecropping for this family of the fields for many years. Now, essentially, they cannot be exchanged for any other sharecroppers. This is, they have already grandfathered in to be the sharecroppers. Now, such type of sharecroppers, it's normal for them to eat the peiros of the field for 2 or 3 years, and then afterwards, the owners of the fields go and use it for 2 or 3 years. So therefore, even though they've had it for a period of 3 years, that's not going to be a chazakah. But yes, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, a regular sharecropper, yes, if he's been there for 3 years, sharecroppers, they come a year, they come 2 years, whatever it is, but they get half, a quarter, they don't get so much. This family, they've been here for many years, so they can take 3 years of you guys, you do it, and we'll take the next 4 years and whatever. But regular sharecroppers, you're right, if they were there for 3 years eating all the produce, it would be a chazakah. Now, however, related, Amar Rav Nachman, he qualifies and he says, but aris, this type of sharecropper that our mission is talking about, of what we call the bati avis, which they've already been there many years, grandfathered in, but which we said that that's where the Mishnah says that they don't have a chazakah. But says Rav Nachman, shahayrid arisin tachtav. If let's say those 3 years that he should have been eating the produce, instead he doesn't even work on the field of sharecropper, he then instead places other sharecroppers in his place to go and work the field and eat the produce, then says Rav Nachman yesh lechazakah. Then he would have a chazakah. My time, what's the reason? Because the lay of it inish is not normal for a person, meaning the owner of the field. The Nachsi Arisi, that random foreign sharecroppers are coming down La'ara into his land without permission, Vishasik, and that he'll be quiet. Because maybe they're going to ruin his fields. Who are these guys? I never hired these guys. Unless, as we'll shortly see from Rabbi Yochanan, that when the sharecropper himself is working with them and he sees what they're doing, then, okay, it makes sense that he would allow, because, okay, this is the guy I hired. I don't know who these guys are, but maybe they're working for him. But if he sees sharecroppers that he never saw in his life, and he doesn't see the guy who he sharecropped it out, he's not even there, and they're eating him for 3 years, then that's obvious that he sold it to that original sharecropper, and that's going to be enough of a chazakah for him. Now, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan actually gives the flip side of this, and he says that aris, regarding a sharecropper of this bati avis, shechalik la'arisin, that if he delegated to every sharecropper to do a certain part, a certain job, a certain area of the field, and he is also working with them, then is in lechazaka. That's what we said, that he does not have a chazaka, because although that he has other people doing the jobs with him, but even that we said from Rav Nachman, that when he has other people instead of him, that then there is a chazaka. Here there's not going to be a chazaka, because in such a situation where at least the sharecropper that he hired is there with them, so then the owner of the field is not particular, because he sees that this guy he hired is with them, and he's going to make sure that they don't just kill the whole field, because with him I know I have a contract with him. As the Gemara explains, my time, what's the reason? Imur harmana ba'al mashabyoi. And that is, we could say that the owner of the field gave permission to the sharecropper that I don't need you to do all the work yourself. You could be some type of a manager and hire other people, you can't do everything yourself, and to work under you. But at least if I see you there, I know that it's your job doing it. But if other sharecroppers, and you're not even there, then he should have protested, and if he didn't, then as like Rav Nachman said, it would be a chazakah. Now, continuing on this topic, the Gemara says, Shalach Rav Nachman Rav Chizdil, Rav Nachman B'Yakov. He says, Gilamdeinu Rabbeinu, let our teacher teach us. Aris, a sharecropper that, let's say, Reuven hired to work his field. Then Shimon, a different guy, comes and contests the ownership of the field. So the question is a sharecropper allowed to be made? Could he testify for Reuven, who is the guy who he's working for, to maintain and say testimony that it's Reuven's field? In other words, do we consider this, which was a discussion we've been mentioning on a previous dafim, do we consider him as a negeya be'edus? Does he have some type of a bias regarding the testimony? Because ultimately, he benefits from the produce of this field. And therefore, he would not be allowed to say testimony? Or would we say that he could say testimony because there is no bias? Oh, yeah, tomato, maybe he cannot say testimony. That's the question that they asked. Now, Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef Kamei, so Rav Yosef was sitting in front of Rav Nachman by Yaakov when he got the question, and Amalei, Rav Yosef, who was sitting in front of him, said to him, this is what Shmuel said, that Aris made. A sharecropper could testify regarding the owner of the field who hired him to testify that it's his field and that this Ma'ar doesn't get to take it away. Now, that the Gemara asked, but Batanya ain't made. Written in the Bryce, it says that Aris cannot testify. So says the Gemara, Lekash, that's not a difficulty, it's not a contradiction. Had the Ikar Peir Ba'ara. One of them is talking about when there's produce in the ground where the sharecropper didn't take his portion yet. That's when the Braisa says he cannot say testimony because obviously there's a bias here. He wants it to be maintained by Reuven because if Shimon takes it away, he's also going to take away his produce like the halacha of a nigzal. A victim of theft takes everything away and the sharecropper wouldn't get what he worked. Maybe he'll get like a yerich lebishus, but he wouldn't even get what he done? So he would lose. So of course there's a bias over there. Then it's like the Braisa said, he cannot testify. Vaha, but the halacha of Shmuel was talking about deleka peir ba'ara, where there is no more, there's no produce on the ground. And moreover, he didn't work neither the sharecropper on this year yet. Then he could testify because he doesn't gain anything with this testimony that he's giving. That's when Shmuel was saying that he could testify. Now Rashbam points out, although you're going to say that maybe there would still be some bias that the sharecropper would want to be maintained in his employer by Reuven, because he would want that he should continue being his sharecropper, he needs a job. So then Rashbam says that's not true, because there's many sharecropping jobs that you could find. And moreover, who knows if Reuven's going to even keep you in your position as an employee next year to be a sharecropper, because if he wants, he could hire you. If he wants, he could not hire you. Therefore, there's not enough bias over there. And there we would believe, like Shmuel said, the Oresh to say testimony if it's not regarding payers that are still here on the ground. Like Gemara says, Amalek Simon, the monik for the next four types of people, that the question is if they have negias for testimony, are they allowed to testify regarding certain people, is amalek, which like the first one is the ayin, is the ariv, mem is the malva, so it talks about four different types of people. So talking about Linda Brysa, ariv, the guarantor of a borrower in relation to his lender, meaning a guarantor is someone, if the borrower doesn't have money to pay up, so the lender goes to the guarantor. So says the Brysa that a guarantor, meyid l'leiva, could testify for the borrower regarding his land, that the one who's contesting it should not be able to take it away. Now, it qualifies the brisa. When could a guarantor testify for his borrower? Is v'hu de'isle, it's only if the borrower has arachriti, has other land besides that land that he's testifying that it's his and not the one who's contesting it. Where, since the lender has other lands to collect his debt from the borrower, and anyway the guarantor is going to be exempt, so it comes out that the guarantor doesn't gain anything whatsoever by testifying that this land should be maintained by the borrower. So there's no bias, and therefore he could say testimony. Now, you can't say that maybe that the Arav does have a bias, and he intentionally wants that there should be many fields by the borrower, because if the borrower owes maybe another creditor, then maybe he's going to first take away this one land, and then this person who's contesting is going to take away this land, and then he's not going to be left with any lands, and then maybe the lender is going to go ahead and collect from the guarantor, so maybe he isn't a gay ba'edis. And that Rashbam says it's not the case, because so much we don't suspect that maybe the borrower is not going to pay back. And maybe when he's not going to pay back, then maybe there's going to be a different lender, there's going to be a different creditor, and then it's going to come, this lender is going to collect from the guarantor. That's what's called shnei chashash, just lechai. So we're not concerned with double types of concerns. Therefore, that's not going to be considered a negei be'edus. Similarly, the interpretation we gave is also the same for the next case in the Gemara regarding a lender with a borrower. We're concerned for one stage, but not like to say that maybe there's going to be one creditor and another creditor. It's only regarding if he has no land, so of course the guarantor has a bias, because he has no more land, so the lender's going to collect from him. But if he has land, then there's no problem, because besides this one that the person contesting has another piece of land, so even if he would take it away, still the lender would go to that other piece of land, not to the guarantor, so therefore that's not considered he has any bias, and therefore he could testify. So to the mem, is malva made l'leiva. A lender could testify for a borrower that this is the borrower's land and not this other person who's contesting it. Now again, it's only if he has other land. If he has no other land, so of course the Malva wants to be the Leivas, because if this guy takes it away, Malva's not going to have a way to collect. But if he has other land, he doesn't care really if this other guy will take it away or not. Therefore, there's no bias, because he'll have the other piece of land, and therefore that's when he can testify. So it says the Gemara, the Lamed is Lekeach Rishon made Lekeach Sheni. An earlier consumer can testify for a secondary consumer. So for example, if let's say there's Reuven, who he sells a field, first one field to Levi, and then he sells a different field to Yehuda. And then there's a random person that comes and he contests regarding the field that Yehuda bought, to say that what are you doing on this field? What, Reuven sold it to you? Reuven stole it from me. So it's regarding such a case that Levi could testify for Yehuda, who again, he's the Lekeach Rishon, he bought first a piece of land from Reuven, and he could testify for Yehuda, who's the second consumer from Reuven. And he could testify for Yehuda that this is his land and not the Ma'ar, the one who's contesting his land. Now, but again, qualifies the Gemara, but Vehuda Islay, that's only if Yehuda has another Arachriti, has another piece of land that he bought from Reuven, that where the creditor of Reuven would be able to collect the debt from Yehuda like a regular creditor who he goes to the last consumer of his debtor. And if he doesn't have, then he goes to the earlier one. But he always goes to the last one who bought the last available lands. Now, therefore, since Yehuda has another piece of land which was indebted to the liens of the creditors of Reuven, or even if, let's say, Yehuda doesn't have another piece of land, but Reuven himself, the seller, has another piece of land that's available where if he had any creditors, they would go to Reuven and wouldn't be able to go to the ones that he sold off to Levi and Yehuda, then that's where the Gemara says that Levi could testify of Yehuda regarding that piece of land which is being contested, because he has no bias here whatsoever regarding his testimony, because even if it would be taken away from Yehuda, the creditor of Reuven, who, that's only a first line that we're concerned with. We're not concerned that there's two creditors. We're concerned with one creditor, that even if he would come, he wouldn't come and grab it away from Levi. Rather, he would take the land, the other piece of land that Yehuda still has, who he bought after Levi from Reuven, or the other piece of land that Reuven still has. Now, because in contrast, if let's say Yehuda did not buy any other land from Reuven, then the Brisa is telling us that Levi would not be able to testify for Yehuda. And the reason is because then there is a bias, because Levi wants that Yehuda should maintain the land, because if the creditor of Reuven comes, if Yehuda doesn't have land, guess who they're coming to? Coming to Levi, and he's going to lose. So therefore he's going to want it to be maintained by Yehuda. Therefore, in such a case, he cannot testify because he's in the Geya, Be'edus, there's a bias over there in his testimony. Now, what's important, what the Gemara is saying is that this is only that Levi, the first Lekeach, cannot testify for Yehuda, the second Lekeach, again, where he doesn't have a different piece of land. But the second Lekeach, Yehuda, could always testify for the first Lekeach, Levi, even where Levi does not have any other pieces of land. The reason for that is very simple, is because the creditor of the seller will always go to the second consumer and not the first. Whether there is land for the first Lekeach or whether or not, he's always going to go to Yehuda before Levi, whether Levi has another piece of land or not. So therefore, Yehuda doesn't gain anything by his testimony. So for example, if let's say this would be talking about where Reuven sold it to Levi, the first Lekeach, without insurance. But what is important, that would actually be different if let's say Reuven sold it to Levi with insurance, then actually even there, says Rashbam, Yehuda would not be able to testify for Levi. And the reason for that is only if there would be more land available by Reuven, then he would be able to testify. That's where he would be able to testify. But if not, then he wouldn't be able to testify, because actually what would happen would be is because then Yehuda would have a bias, because he'd be concerned that if they take away this field, this one who's contesting, from Levi, guess what's going to happen? Levi's going to go back to Reuven because you insured me. And Reuven's going to say, I'm sorry, I don't have any land. So guess what he's going to do? He's going to go, so fine. But whatever your properties were at the time that you sold to me, there was an indebtedness, there was a lien on all your properties. And guess who bought after Levi? Yehuda. So he's going to go ahead and collect from Yehuda. So of course there's a bias from Yehuda to Levi. So therefore, says Rashbam, it seems that in such a case, that then Yehuda would not be able to testify for Levi. But if it was without insurance, then in all situations, Yehuda could testify for Levi, because it doesn't make a difference. The only difference would be creditors, and anyways, creditors are going to come to him before Levi, then he doesn't stand to gain anything. Now the Gemara continues in Tav Mem Zayin Mem Aleph. The last one, the kuf of this Amalek, mnemonic, is Kablan. Now specifically, we're talking about an Arif Kablan. An Arif Kablan is a unique type of a guarantor, which is that the reason why it's called a Kablan is because he receives the money directly from the lender, and then he gives it to the borrower. He's very much involved, more than the regular guarantor. His halacha is that actually the lender could collect from whichever one he wants to. Usually, the halacha is by a regular guarantor, that you're not allowed to go ahead and try to collect from the guarantor until you first took the lender the borrower to court, and he was found to be liable to pay up the debt, and if he doesn't have what to pay, then he go to collect from the guarantor. But an Arif Kablan is different. He could always, whenever he wants, to go directly to the guarantor, this Arif Kablan, and collect even if he didn't go to the borrower yet. Now, regarding a Kablan, Amri La Maid, some want to say that he could testify regarding the borrower. V'Amri La Eina Maid, and some say that he cannot testify. Why? So the Gemara explains. Amri La Maid, that those who say that just like a regular guarantor could testify for the Leiva when there are other pieces of land, so too could the Arav Kablan, because Karav Dami, just like a guarantor, so does the Arav Kablan, where if there's land by the if there's another piece of land, so anyway, the land is going to go to the borrower, so therefore it's the same thing like an arv. Now, b'va'amri la'enim be, that those who say that he cannot testify, because no, even if there is another piece of land, besides this one that's being contested by the borrower, the guarantor cannot testify him because he is negei be'edus. Why so? Because the nichalei de lahave b'yodei tarvayu, because it's preferable, and that's why he might be biased and not be totally 100% honest, that the borrower should have two types of land by the borrower. In other words, because he wants that the borrower should have many lands of ziburist lowest grade and bainis medium grade. Why? Because the chi'asa bal chayv, because when his creditor, the lender, comes to collect what he's allowed to collect, which is bainis, he's going to come to the kablin, like the law is by a creditor that he collects from bainis. So he wants that my debay shakal, that what he wants he could take. In other words, that the guarantor could then tell the lender, look, go and take the baininess of the borrower who borrowed the money from you. Now that's what makes him a negei be'edus, because if the borrower would not have medium grade type of field, then the lender would only go ahead and collect the medium type of grade of field from the kablin, because that's his law. And the law is by arv kablin, he can go whichever one he wants to. He can go not just to the leiva. If the leiva has ziburis, then he doesn't have to go. He can get the bainness from the arv kablin. He can go directly to him. So therefore, the arv kablin, even if the leiva has two fields and one of them is being contested, he cannot testify because he wants him to have both fields, meaning the one that's being contested of bainness, not just the other one that he has of ziburis. Because if he's only going to be left with ziburis, guess what? The bal chayv, the creditor, the lender, is going to come to him then, and not to the borrower. Even the borrower has fields. No, this is different than the regular creditor, guarantor, which we said regarding the ayin of the first case, where there you cannot say that. There everyone holds that if the borrower has two fields then, and one is being contested, that he could testify. It's because as long as the borrower has anything to pay back the lender, even zibur is the lowest grade field, then the lender has no rights to go to the Arv, as the Gemara says at the end of the Masech, Nafkaf Ayin Dalam and Aleph, that you cannot go ahead and claim your money from the guarantor unless the borrower has nothing to pay. So there, everyone agrees that if he has any other field, then the Arv could testify. But here, there are those who say that he could, but there are those who say that he cannot, because ultimately there is still a benefit that he wants, that there should be many fields by the borrower, where even if he has other fields, but they might be more inferior grade, and then the malva might want to come to Arv Kablin, which he could choose. He wants to make sure that this guy's got a lot of fields, that he's going to be satisfied to go in and collect it from his own borrower, and not from the Arv Kablin, which he could do initially. And therefore, even if he has fields, this opinion says that he cannot testify because there's still a bias over there that the Arv Kablin has regarding his leiva.